We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Subscribers to NewOrleans.football get the full story, so make sure you're signed up to NewOrleans.football, NewOrleans.football/subscribe. You get all of our news, analysis, insights, and extra podcasts every week, and much, much more. So make sure you are signed up today. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment. We got a story up there right now with all the buzz going on at the owners' meetings. We're going to cover some of that today, but we aren't going to give you all of it. So if you want to know what's up with Marshawn Lattimore, make sure you go sign up to the website today and you can get that full rundown. All right, we are coming to you from different locations. Mike's at the studio on Vets. I'm out here in Orlando. This is another episode of New Orleans Style Football presented by PJ's Coffee. And if you need a new car, make sure you check out my guy, Matt Bowers. He's got dealerships all over the region, 12 different ones, in fact, all kinds of different types of cars. Whatever you need, he can take care of you, and he'll get you the best prices, the best customer care, and the best of everything, the best car buying experience you can have. Matt Bowers, make sure you check him out today, and make sure you check out the rest of our great sponsors. They're going to give you a quick word here, and we'll be right back. The NewOrleans.football show is proudly presented by PJ's Coffee. PJ's Coffee has some of the best drinks that you can find. They have locations all over the city. They have pastries and everything else you need to get your day started. So go check them out. Are you looking for the perfect engagement ring? Look no further than Friend & Company Fine Jewelers' new engagement salon. This new area houses a wide selection of engagement rings to choose from in all cuts, sizes, and colors. Their experienced staff offer five-star customer care to help you find the perfect ring to express your love. Visit their new engagement salon today. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the perfect ring for the perfect moment and also for the perfect person. 7713 Maple Street between Adams and Burdett Street. 504-866-5433. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers. Check them out at friendandcompany.com. Hard Hide Punch Tool Strawberry Whiskey is an 86 proof blend of aged wheat bourbon, American light whiskey, and fresh Punch Tool strawberries. Blended in New Orleans, it is not for the thin skinned. Look for it in your favorite stores, bars, and restaurants. New Orleans Stop Football is proud to be sponsored by Firehouse Subs. Make sure you check out their location on Veterans Boulevard. All right, let's get into the show. All right, let's get into our lead topic presented by Friend & Company. Friend & Company Fine Jewelers, the official jewelers of the New Orleans Saints. Friend & Company has a beautiful new engagement salon. So if you're about to ask somebody special that special question, make sure you go and check them out. They'll get you the best care that you can find, the best prices, the best customer care. They can take care of you. They got you covered in all different types of price ranges. And while you're there, check out their Florida lead necklace and earrings that you see on the screen. $1,100 for the earrings, $1,350 for the necklace. Tell them that NOF sent you. All right. So I'm out here in Orlando. Mike is at Vets. He's at our studio there. And we're hearing a lot of stuff going on here. This is kind of where everybody in the NFL is this week. The Saints have their whole contingent out here. Director of Pro Personnel, Michael Parenton. Draft guru, Jeff Ireland. Cap guru, Kai Harley. Head coach, Dennis Allen. GM, Mickey Loomis. Owner, Gail Benson. President, team president, Dennis Lauscha. Everybody that can make a decision for the Saints is basically here right now. And we're hearing from a lot of them, just kind of on some of the stuff that's been going on. Dennis Allen's going to address the media tomorrow on Tuesday at 6:45 Central Time. So we'll have some updates there. But we're kind of already full sprint here, kind of hearing a lot of different stuff that's going on. You know, the most interesting thing to me, I think, so far, or at least starting out this conversation, we heard from Mickey Loomis, and he actually admitted that their cap cleanup process, right now as it sits, they plan on it being a two-year exercise. So it's not just this year. It's going to be next year, too. They're going to still be trying to be competitive. Obviously, if they get into the playoffs, they go on a run, they feel like they're a couple players away, that goes out the window, and they just go for it again. But if things kind of play out at a steady pace here this year, next year, this team plans on using that time to get their cap in order to recover from all the stuff that happened during COVID, get to a place where they can kind of go out and do some free agent shopping every year and not have to worry about how they're going to move their balances from credit card to credit card. And that's going to be the path forward. So it was just kind of interesting to hear that today. Does it surprise you at all that Mickey's actually looking at it that way and that's the current course of action?
Not necessarily surprising that that's how he's looking at it, but that he was so candid about it. I mean, you can go on our YouTube channel, watch that entire conversation that you and some other reporters had with Mickey, and you were asking him specifically about that. He kind of played coy on other subjects where he didn't tip his hand, but for that one, he said, yeah, this. I mean, what you're seeing is what we are really doing, and it'll probably take, like you said, this year and next year. And I guess technically you could say they've really been doing this ever since COVID. They just interrupted this sort of soft cap reset to sign Derek Carr because it was so important to get the quarterback. But what they're not doing this year is they're really not even doing a lot of the, you know, $8 million Malcolm Jenkins, the $7.5 million a year Marcus May. Like, this year has really been a where can we really cut some costs so that we, you know, backup quarterback. And as of now, you know, not re-signing an Andrus Peat, not even re-signing a Isaac Gautam or an Alani Johnson Jr. when they're just a couple million dollars more than the base minimum. It seems like they're really, really, really intent on doing it this year. So it was interesting to hear him acknowledge it so that, you know, we know that we're not just waiting for the, you know, the two big signings around the corner that kind of undermine everything we think they're doing right now.
So, I mean, I think it's a little bit different, though, in the sense that they haven't given anybody a second year on a contract. Like, Colin Saunders, Shepard, like, you know, Marcus May, like, these were multi-year deals in the past. Like, right now, it's all one-year deals. Like, everything's, it's even pared back a little bit. But you're right, they have been paring back since COVID. But, like, this is like, a stronger step one direction. I mean, it's kind of... It's kind of shocking, you know, in the sense that it's just like extremely, extremely measured. It's all 1 year high upside deals where it's like everybody they're signing has to have something to prove. So it's a fascinating area for them to be right now.
No, I think so. Like I said, we're still in kind of we'll believe it when we see it mode. It's hard not to believe it at this point. You made the point earlier that, you know, they can't hide it. I mean, the proof is sort of in their actions right now. But look, I still think they're going to be competitive in the meantime. And like I said, I mean, they didn't sign nobody. They signed Chase Young and Willie Gay Jr. But what I like about those signings is those guys, and we're going to get into this topic very soon, those guys are 25, 26 years old, 24 years old in Chase Young's case. And so, you know, so far, I like the approach, but I can tell it's kind of killing them, even Mickey Loomis, as much as it is the fan base, to kind of sit there patiently and kind of force himself to stick to a plan like this. You know, they get antsy.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the main thing with them is just staying to it, staying patient. And yeah, he said he even admitted that it was a little bit of an issue. One of the other things that we heard out here is that Cam Jordan underwent surgery on his ankle. He was dealing with high ankle and low ankle sprains last year, relegated kind of just to running snaps because he didn't have that explosiveness there. I mean, it is a significant major injury. Cam's also a little bit later in his career, so it's going to be interesting to see how he comes back from that. But I mean, obviously getting that fixed is going to be something that just it has to help his game. Like it's you have two ankle sprains in the same ankle, that's going to hinder you a little bit, and it's going to impact your production. He only had, I think, two sacks last year. So the hope there is that he gets back and he gets on the field and looks more like the Cam that we kind of know and the Cam that you know, again, it is later in his career, but I mean, that was a drastic change. And obviously, I think the injury is a significant factor to that. What are you expecting from Cam this season? Like, what's the ideal? Everything comes together. Cam's Cam, you know, is his ankle's healthy? What does his season look like for you realistically? Like, you know, obviously the ideal thing is he turns back the clock, 12 sacks. I mean, I don't think anybody's betting on
that's
that.
Not gonna happen.
But realistically, the ideal scenario, what are you looking for from him?
I think a realistic hope is the second half of 2022. Didn't he have the 3-sack game against Philadelphia or a 2-sack game against Philadelphia? He had 2 multi-sack games and 2 of their biggest wins of the season. And after he kind of had a slow start that year, he ended up getting his numbers a little closer to what we're used to with him. What was really interesting to me last year was that when he became a part-time player because of those ankle injuries, they just used him on rundowns. And we've heard Dennis Allen say a couple times after this season, we still think he's a great asset on rundowns. We just need to have a better plan for how he can finish at the quarterback. But if you add a Chase Young, if they add another edge rusher in the draft, if Peyton Turner or Isaiah Foskey is able to come along, Cam sort of might be a rundowns guy who can stay fresh at this age and provide a little pass rush on those downs, but be coming off the field on third downs. And I know he would hate that, but you know, you're getting a guy with pass rush ability who is a very good player in those base packages. I think that's the transition they want to see him continue to excel at. I think the days of him being an every down player are gone, unless, you know, 2 other guys are out in a given week.
Yeah, so 2022, he had 3 sacks against Philly in week 16. He had a half a sack against Pittsburgh in week 10. And that was the entirety of his sack production in the second half of that season. He had 3 quarterback hits against Philly as well. The first half of that season, he was actually a little bit more productive. He had 5 sacks, 5, 7, 8, 9 quarterback hits. Like, if he can get back to that, I think they're cooking. Like, that would be great. He had a 2-sack game against Seattle. So, I mean, maybe it's a situation where there's some clusters and he kind of produces in bunches a little bit. But if he can get back to the beginning of that season, but yeah, I think it's kind of fascinating that he kind of saw his best part of that season at the beginning, and then midway through it kind of dipped on him a little bit. But if he could be a guy that gives him 4 or 5 sacks and is solid against the run, I think that's solid if you're getting something else from other players. And if Chase Young's doing something, if Peyton Turner's doing something, if Foskey's doing something, even if just one of those 3 of those guys is doing something, like, maybe then you're in the mix. But if he can be out there and give you some, you know, spot production, if he's playing, you know, a 2nd and 6 and, or a 2nd, you know, whatever, a 2nd and short, you're expecting to run and they pass, he can still rush the passer. Like, that's good. Like, just in certain different situations where if he can make something happen where it's not necessarily an obvious pass situation, but he's out there and can still get the quarterback, I think that would be great for them. But yeah, I don't think that you want to go into this, you know, counting on him regardless of the ankle or not. Like, the transition plan was supposed to start a long time ago, and like, they just didn't,
no kidding,
they didn't get there. It just didn't work. So you're still relying on somebody that shouldn't be carrying as much weight. Like, they should be helping Cam get to the end of his career and, you know, still be productive in his own way. And I think, I think the injury was an obvious issue. I think
it's almost weirdly good news to hear about the injury, because like, you want to see that he didn't just like sort of hit a cliff last year.
And I think we knew that.
It's
though.
Okay, I mean, that he's, yeah, I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, that it was really significant because Dennis Allen talked about the injury and stuff too. But when you hear high ankle sprain and low ankle sprain and surgery, you're like, oh, he was really battling. Really, really hurt.
Yeah. And look, that's the thing. Like, I think we can look at that. We know. And I mean, I think the aging process for him is should have been graceful, you know, remove the injury. But like, there's pressure on it because these other guys that they've drafted, 3 of them now, like, haven't given you anything yet. Like, you got some from Davenport, but obviously he wasn't what he was supposed to be. Nothing from Turner, nothing from Foskey. Like, so if some of those picks hit, like, Cam should be able to go into this and it should be no big deal. Like, it should just be like, yeah, Cam's still a good player, like, at his age. Like, that's fine. But there's so much pressure on him that shouldn't be there.
This is true of every player in every sport who reaches the heights of someone like Cam Jordan, but he's always going to be judged against Cam Jordan, and he's going to be judged against his salary, which is still high, even though he took a pay cut last year while adding years to it. And he's probably not going to live up to the name on the back of his jersey or the price tag. But if you're talking about, is he a bigger asset than you know, Nathan Shepard and Colin Saunders and other guys who are playing on base downs and providing a pass rush. I still think he's an asset if you're thinking of him as probably maybe overpaid for that role, but maybe overqualified for that role, but still an asset if that becomes a situation or role that he's playing.
Yeah. Last point on this before we roll into our next segment. Yeah, make sure you check out neworleans.football / subscribe. Get the latest on Marshawn Lattimore, Kyle Shanahan talking about Clint Kubiak. You know, one of the things that I really liked hearing today from John Harbaugh was that he views Keith Williams as the best route running coach that he's ever been around. I mean, I think that is a huge endorsement for a coach that's been around for a long time. He said he's the best route running coach that you could ask for, said he's good at everything, but like that is his specialty. Not necessarily a huge shock considering that like he trained Tyreek Hill on the side in his, you know, during off seasons before he became the Baltimore head or assistant wide receiver coach, he trained Devontae Adams. So, I mean, that was kind of something that was known, but to get that kind of endorsement from somebody like Harbaugh, it was huge. It caught my attention. Can only mean good things for Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, A.T. Perry, young receivers who I think obviously can benefit from somebody with that type of acumen in that area of the game.
Yeah, Nick is out there in Orlando doing work. Everybody's got to check this out. I mean, you've got Nick and Brandon out there doing work because you got Mike McDaniel and Cedric Wilson. You got Kyle Shanahan and Clint Kubiak. You've got draft stuff. You got Marshawn stuff. Getting a lot of insight there. And I was really interested, obviously, to hear all the nuggets as you were pouring them in as well. So, like you said, it's another one of these events, just like the Combine last month, that becomes the epicenter of the NFL, and you find out a lot about, you know, what the teams got going on. And man, oh man, I mean, it was January 10th. We thought Marshawn was the most interesting piece we're waiting to find out about, and that's still true in late March.
Yeah, it's a weird place to be. You just kind of see everybody, and it's. You know, sometimes you got to chase down Kyle Shanahan on an elevator to get a quote. Like, it's just kind of what you got to do. But, yeah, that's the world right now. All right, our next segment is brought to you by Hardhide Ponchatoula Strawberry Whiskey. What would it take for us to believe in the Saints' young core? Last, on a Friday show, we were kind of talking a little bit about how the Saints have an aging core, but there are some young players on this team. But when you look at it, you do kind of feel like they're an older team because it feels like a lot of the key players are older. So the point here is, what would it take for us to buy into the younger players on this core and to kind of feel like they got some of those guys coming up behind them? The Saints do have pick 14, pick 45. Those are their first two round picks. And there are a handful of notable players who will be under the age of 27 entering week one. Kendre Miller's 22. Brian Brzee's 22. Isaiah Foskey's 23. Chris Olave is 24. Jordan Howden's 24. A.T. Perry's 24. Nick Saldiveri, 24. It's kind of older for like a second-year player. It's a little bit surprising.
I think that was probably a COVID effect when we were looking at putting this list together, that so many of the guys coming out in recent years were a little older than
that's right. Yeah, stay in school a little bit longer. Yeah. Chase Young is 25, which is crazy. He's about to get the fifth year.
He's actually 24 right now. This list is what they'll be in week one, and Chase Young hasn't even turned 25 yet.
Unbelievable. Ohio State, man, they got like young guys coming out of there all the time. Marshawn just misses the cutoff on those, that being that he's 27. Pete Werner's 25. Paulson Adebo, 25. Alante Taylor, 25. Cesar Ruiz, 25. Trevor Penning, 25. Hayner, 25. Groupie, 25. Rashid Shaheed, 26. Peyton Turner, 26. Willie Gay, 26. And DeMarco Jackson is 26 years old. So I don't know how we want to frame this. I don't know.
Well, like, first of all, you want to just sort of my general vibe. And this list has more names on it than I even would have guessed. I mean, there's guys you can build around here. We definitely like the receiver position, Olave and Shaheed and Perry, and obviously have high hopes for Kendre Miller. But it's still... What worries me more about this team is the names that aren't on the list. I mean, there's no DeMario, there's no Cam, there's no Ramchek, there's no Lattimore, there's no Kamara, there's no Taysom, there's no Derek Carr. It's just all the guys that are the core players on this team aren't going to be the core of this team much longer. And I see a lot of complimentary guys on this list. Olave is my only A1, you know, build around guy on this list. You could make a case for Paulson Adebo. You could make a case for Brian Brzee, certainly Chase Young if he gets right. But these are a lot of complimentary guys. I need younger versions of DeMario, of Derek Carr, of Ryan Ramczyk, of Alvin Kamara. I need Tyrann Mathieu. I need younger versions of those core players that are like the guys that are making top 100 NFL lists that are all pros. That's what really bothers me. I don't dislike this group of 22 to 26 year olds. Just where's the top tier of it?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the difference is like if we had done this 5 years ago, there were four or five guys that you're building around. And again, it takes like a generational draft, but the fact that there's like one sure thing and then a couple maybes, like that's kind of telling of how their struggles have been in the early rounds of the draft in recent years. But I do think that quickly there could potentially be three or four of these if this season goes well. Kendre Miller, I think, definitely has that potential. Brzee had 4.5 sacks last year, so he's right there knocking on the door. Jordan Howden, I think, has the potential. I don't think A.T. Perry becomes like a Lave level type player, but he could be a solid piece. But, you know, I think that cutoff line, you put it underneath Howden and, you know, move Foskey down. But Alave, Howden, Brzee, Miller, I think, have potential to be building block type players. Alante Taylor, I think, has that same type of potential too. So throw him in there. I don't know why I can't get there on Adebo. Like, he should be someone we view that way, but it just kind of feels like, I don't know.
We need to see it for another year.
I think that's fair. And I think it hurts him that the mental comparison is Marshawn Lattimore. And I don't think he's going to hit that mark. You know, you mentioned DeMario. I think DeMario is almost like a unicorn. Like, linebackers in the NFL just aren't good right now. Like, there aren't a lot of good linebackers, and he's one of them. So he's going to be really hard to replace. You know, I think Shaheed could be a core type player, maybe not foundational, but he's definitely, you know, a strong piece to a roster. So, I mean, there's a handful of guys here. It's just you need maybe a little. I think the difference is that you just have one guy with that's superstar potential that you can kind of see right now, and there's nobody else that's really quite there yet. And you'd like to have maybe two, three of those guys, and they don't right now. But I think that there's more young players on this team than I thought. Like, the length of this list is a little bit surprising, and
I agree with that part.
Yeah, I think we just got to see a little bit more, and I think there's some potential there to change the narrative. But until they do, there's a lot of potential, and just really one guy that I feel like we've kind of gotten that production from, and I think Adebo too. I think you throw Adebo in there too, as far as a production guy. I need to see more. Definitely believe in Olave all the way. So yeah, I think it's just we got to see a little bit more out of these guys.
Eric McCoy just missed this list too. He's 26 now. He'll turn 27 before the season starts. That's still relatively young. So yeah, the depth of this list doesn't bother me, and that actually gives me hope that you give me three more draft picks, and I'm not even talking about the 2017 draft class. I'm talking three more Olaves, which is saying a lot, you know, over the next couple of years. You quickly feel better about it. I mean, we've made the Detroit Lions comparison a few times because the Detroit Lions did not, you know, strip it down to the studs and get Joe Burrow with the first pick 1 year and Ja'Marr Chase with the, you know, top three pick the next year. But they did get a Penei Sewell and an Aiden Hutchinson and then some skill position players and then that all and some good coaches, and that all made Jared Goff look better, and that all made Alex Anzalone look better as the captain of the defense and guys we're familiar with. It does, Amon-Ra St. Brown was another one they did. That, you know, it just takes a few guys to be sort of the four guys you put on the poster, and then you feel a lot better about depth like this. It's just missing the guys on the poster.
All
right. Easier said than done, right?
All right, I'm taking Olave off the list. I'm taking Adebo off the list. I'm taking Alante Taylor off the list. I'm taking Shaheed off the list. Who's your number one potential pick? With those four guys removed,
who took Olave, Shaheed, Adebo, and who?
Olave, Shaheed, Adebo, and Alante Taylor.
Well, Brzee. I feel like he was a 29th pick in the draft and not a top 10 caliber pick, but I think he's going to be someone that you feel good about on this team for years to come. So I think him number one. Kendry Miller has exciting upside. I'm trying to find someone on here that I think could make a Pro Bowl, quote unquote, could make a Pro Bowl. God, we used to feel that way about Pete Werner. Now I almost feel more like Willie Gay has more of a chance.
Who I mean, Chase Young's obviously.
I forgot you didn't take him off the list.
Yeah, yep. Chase Young. Yep. Yeah, he's definitely there. I mean, the problem with him is that he's on a 1-year contract. He's gonna have to get mega money if you're keeping him. Like, I think he earns it. Like, if you know, if we're talking about him being like a true upside guy for this team, like you're paying for it because he showed it this year, which is a good problem to have. But like, yeah, I mean, he's not on the rookie deal like Brzee. So I mean, I think that kind of puts Brzee ahead of him, just, you know, in terms of that. Yeah, I think Brzee 1, Chase Young 2. Number 3 would probably be Kendre. Are we going Kendre over AT and Howden? Maybe.
I mean, there's two names on this list, Cesar Ruiz and Pete Werner, who have we seen too much of them to think there could ever be a light bulb moment with Cesar Ruiz and Pete Werner, or could coaching do it, or could year 4 in Werner's case and year 5 in Ruiz's case do it? Ruiz is still only 25. I mean, those are guys we thought had the potential to be the top two names on this list at one point in their careers. We're giving Brzee the benefit of the doubt because we've only seen him for 1 year. We were just as excited about, you know, Werner and not, well, Ruiz had a tough rookie year, but so those are other names, but it just feels like they're never going to reach upper tier.
Yeah. I feel like we've seen them a little bit. I mean, I think there's probably still room, but we've seen it. Like, I think, you know, it's just hasn't, you know, the path hasn't continued up, and if Brzee's path doesn't continue up, he ends up in the same place.
It's so obvious what's happened to this team. It's just a crying shame that Peyton Turner and Trevor Penning aren't the guys we're talking about.
Yeah,
it would make us feel so much different about this team. Yeah, but especially Turner and Penning. I guess the jury's still out on Foskey, but. Yeah, not a very inspiring that he wasn't forcing his way into the roster.
Davenport not getting a second contract is just devastating when you put 2 first-round picks into that, and then he doesn't even stick around. So, yeah, it's those 3 guys right there. Those the sum of those 4 picks, and then, you know, whatever else you want to put on Penning as far as like the accounting there. But yeah,
he's one of the older ones that was probably in college for a while.
Yeah, I can't believe he's 26. Like, he feels younger.
He's 25 today, but will turn 26. Yeah, before the season starts. What I was going to say is, I sound like a broken record on this because I know I've said it about 5 times this offseason, but it's so true for everyone who's out there, you know, saying this is how the Saints need to approach things. This is what Mickey Loomis is doing wrong. This is what Gail Benson's doing wrong. This is what Dennis Allen's doing wrong. They need to rebuild. Oh, they need this. Any plan you have for this team, it starts with drafting well. You have to draft well, no matter what your approach to team building is. Go for it this year. Start over completely from scratch or something in between. You got to draft well. There's no way around it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm high on Willie Gay, too. I think Willie Gay is going to be really good for this team. I'm high on him. I want to just say that I'm high on Adebo, too. Like, it's just, I want to see it one more year before I put him in that superstar block. But I think he's shown to this point that if you want to keep him around, like, he's going to be a good starter. Like, it's just, I'm looking for the next version of Marshawn, Alvin, Mike Thomas, you know, that core, Ramchek. Like, we're looking for those types of players. And I think Olave is the only one knocking on the door right now. And I think Adebo's on the stoop. But, you know, it's just, you get that next season and maybe he's there. But we're going to talk about that.
The 2023 draft class has a lot of heavy lifting to do. It'd be really nice if we felt better about Kendry Miller, Isaiah Foskey, Nick Saldivari, A.T. Perry, Jordan Howden next year. If those guys all take a step up, that class is, and Jake Haener for that matter, it's a pretty fascinating class that it almost feels like a lot of them redshirted last year.
And make sure you get that hit at 14. The first-round pick's got to be a player. No more misses in the first round. They can't afford them. All right. We're going to get into a bunch more stuff on the backside of this commercial break. We have the money segment coming up, which we're going to talk about the 23 free agents and what they might do next season. We got your question of the day, and we're going to talk about that stuff and more right after this quick word from our sponsors. We will be right back after this.
and ready to own your dream home? Contact Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union, your trusted source for home loans. Our competitive rates and flexible terms can help make your home ownership dreams a reality. If you're a first-time home buyer or looking to refinance, our experienced lenders are here to help. Our online application process allows you to apply on your schedule. It's quick, easy, and convenient. Visit us online at jeffersonfinancial.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
Martin Wine and Spirits is home to a selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and much, much more. They are family-owned and operated since 1946 and specialize in wine, spirits, gourmet food, gift baskets, catering, and tasting events. They have many locations, so they're never too far away. You can check them out in Metairie, New Orleans, Mandeville, and Baton Rouge, or if it's more convenient, you can always shop online. Whether you're a wine novice or a seasoned collector, you'll enjoy the Martin Wine and Spirit experience. All right, welcome back to Orlando / Metairie. We're going to keep talking to you about Saints. It's time for the Muddy segment presented by Jefferson Financial Federal Credit Union. Which of the 2023 free agent signings could have a 2024 breakthrough? We've obviously spent a lot of time talking about the Saints' 2024 signings and how sparse their spending has been. But what about last year's free agent class outside of Derek Carr? It feels like about everyone they signed to a multi-year deal was a little bit average at best last year, and the Saints kind of need some guys to step up. Do we have higher expectations for anybody on this list? Let's start with Jamal Williams, who I think has to be better. Like, it's impossible. It's impossible not to be more productive than he was last season. I mean, I think that he probably got overhyped a little bit over the 17 touchdowns, being the NFL's touchdown leader, all that stuff. I think he was never going to get back to that level. But the production, getting the stolen touchdown in the final game is the only one. And then his yards per carry last year. I mean, it was shocking, 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 I think, just based on even the lowest of expectations when he came in. I kind of can't believe how last season went for him. So I'm going to take the over on whatever expectations are coming into this year, because it is rock bottom, I think, for him right now. And there's only one way to go.
Well, obviously I'm taking the over on 306 rushing yards and 62 receiving yards, which were his totals last year. However, I think the entire run game should be better. That's what they've devoted this entire, new coaching staff, Clint Kubiak and Rick Dennison and John Benton, and just the whole philosophy of going to the Kubiak-Shanahan system is about getting this run game better, getting the blocking better, and I think it should benefit all three running backs. However, I think it should benefit Kamara and Kendre Miller both more than it benefits Jamal Williams. I think their styles seem to fit a little better than Jamal Williams, and he's kind of the third running back I'm most optimistic about on this team. So I think better than last year, but becoming sort of like what he was when he was, the 1A, 1B with Aaron Jones in Green Bay, or when he was the 1A and 1B in Detroit. I don't have those kind of expectations for him here.
No, I agree with that. I mean, I think he's just a solid piece kind of in this rotation, and you don't want him to be 1A, 1B. You want him to be, three behind Alvin and Kendra. That's just a successful season for the Saints. I think we can agree on the over for that one. And look, like you said, I think the system will benefit him too. I think he's a little bit better of a zone runner than, some of the power stuff that the Saints were doing last year. There was a little bit more of that here than he saw in other places. So I think just kind of going full blown outside, inside zone is probably going to help him a little bit. But yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think ultimately the investment there probably is never going to, the production's probably never going to reach the investment point, but I think that's fine. It's just kind of, they're in the cost now and there's nothing you can do about it. But coming up, number two guy here, Foster Moreau, you expect him more, less, same? What was kind of your thought process on Foster going into the next season?
I mean, different paths to getting there, but I kind of feel very similar to him that I feel about Jamal Williams. I mean, I expected him to be a complimentary player, but I didn't expect him to disappear this much from the offense. He had 21 catches for 193 yards and one touchdown. 193 yards and one touchdown. So even when he was in Vegas putting together small numbers, he still had 12 TDs in his first 4 years. He was catching 30-plus passes. He was catching closer to 400 yards. He had a good red zone rapport with Derek Carr. I mean, I think they needed both Jamal Williams and Foster Moreau to be blockers more than they expected or hoped for in their roles in this offense. So I can't expect too much more, but I don't expect Jimmy Graham to be here, barring a draft pick of you know, Brock Bowers in round one. I think Juwan Johnson and Foster Moreau have a chance to be your top two tight ends next year. So they got to find a way to make him a little bit more of this offense. I'm not expecting huge things, but definitely more than we saw last year.
I would be really surprised if they aren't really motivated to try to get another tight end on this roster. Yeah. I think it's just such an important part of this offense. I would be really, really surprised if it wasn't something that they were strongly, strongly desiring. But I agree with you. I think he'll be a little bit better next year too. Look, his leadership behind the scenes is really good. I think, you know, there were some injuries and stuff. Like I think that there's upside for him. Let's do the next two together, Shepherd and Saunders. How do we feel about that duo?
Do you not pair them together, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was more excited about Saunders than I was about Shepherd when they signed them. Shepherd actually ended up a little more productive. I want to get your take because you obviously do the film studies every week and you saw who was more of an asset against the run, who was more of maybe a liability against the run because their run defense was not good enough. And these two guys, a credit to them, they both started all 17 games last year, a first in both of their careers. And Saunders had a lot of injury history, so that's really good that he started all 17 games. Shepherd, 50 tackles. Saunders, 57 tackles. I believe those were both career highs. Shepherd, a career high 3.5 sacks. Saunders, no sacks. They're going to be on the team. They belong on the team in complementary roles. But, you know, I think you would like them to be your third and fourth. I think you'd like to have Brian Brzee and you'd like to have somebody else that you feel better about. But they can be 3 and 4 in my four-man rotation. What do you think of these guys?
Yeah, I think Shepherd is like your backup three tech of Brzee's. Like kind of cruising, I think is fine. Like I actually think he kind of quietly earned his money last year. Like he had a, I think like 10 quarterback hits or something, 3.5 sacks. Like he had a decent season. It wasn't terrible. Like it wasn't difference making. But like if he's a depth player at that price and he's giving you 4 sacks every season, like that's a pretty decent number for an inside guy. Like it was a very quiet number. And yeah, for some reason when they came in, I liked the Saunders signing a little bit better. It felt like there was more upside there. Look, I mean, it's just kind of like Saunders is so gregarious and outgoing, and Shepherd is the polar opposite of that. So it's not necessarily the way it should be, but like when somebody is just like a magnetic personality, they're going to get talked about a little bit more. It just kind of happens that way. They draw attention to themselves, like not meaning
and
to.
Shepherd's the exact opposite.
Doesn't
do a lot of interviews at all.
Yeah, he kind of just doesn't want anything to do with the media game, which is fine. That's cool. But, like, it just kind of makes it, like, flow that way. And then Saunders had that, you know, he had the offensive role. Like, he just became a more interesting player overall, so he got talked about more. And Shepherd just kind of quietly went about his business. So, yeah, I kind of liked what Shepherd did last year in, like, a very quiet type of way. It wasn't an answer, but, like, you know, if it's the side part to the main meal or whatever, that's fine. I think it was solid. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. And I think it's kind of interesting that they hit Shepherd's, they hit Shepherd's restructure too. Like it was just kind of something that was interesting to see as well. So,
You know what is funny though? Nothing. I mean, Nathan Shepherd can carry himself however he wants in front of the media, but Jamal Williams, Foster Moreau, and Colin Saunders are three of the biggest personalities in the whole locker room. So even though the production wasn't there, they definitely added a ton of personality to this locker room.
No doubt. And then Jonathan Abram, Lonnie Johnson were part of the class last year. Abram resigned. Johnson left for the Texans. I think Abram's probably going to have another, maybe even a little bit more of a role. We got a super chat question. Any late round tight ends you guys have your eyes on? Players like Raymond Barner, Eric Hall. Like, look, man, I'm going to be, I'm not into my late round tight ends, but like, I think it is somebody something that they should look for sure. And I think you got to keep adding to that room. Even if you aren't doing like Brock Bowers at 14 or you aren't getting a guy at 45, like I think your third rounder, fourth, fifth, I'm sorry, they don't have third round picks, but the fifth round and on when they have those three picks in the fifth round, I think you should be looking to add to the room one way or another. Maybe you get a gem somewhere. I think they need to be making efforts to kind of just be pumping talent into that area and hope something kind of hits, because they do need some upside there. But I do think if there is an option at 14 or 45, I think it is something that's going to be at least strongly considered, because I do think it is an important part of this offense, and I think they got to try to figure it out.
Yeah, I don't outside of Bowers, I don't know how anyone can be a huge part of the pass catching part of this offense. It's a thin draft class for that, and free agency's already been picked over the few guys that were available in free agency. It's a funny position where, I mean, how many guys have we seen cycle through here? The Nick Vanettes, the Jesse Jameses, there's a lot of these guys with a couple years under their belt that seem to always be making the rotation out of work. So it's kind of an easy position to fill cheap with a younger veteran. The upgrade is what's really, really hard to do with this position. I do think it's good to have a young guy, though, along with these veterans.
Yeah, the thing is like a lot of times like players don't get super valued at this position, but they change offenses. Like I think like no, when you get a legitimately good one, those offenses just become dynamite. And I think it's just it's a lot of things. Like, again, I don't think linebackers in the NFL are very good. So if you get like an actual good tight end, like there aren't a lot of linebackers that can do anything about it. So you get a mismatch there. Then you bring a safety down. If this guy can actually run routes and receive, you can't really cover him with the safety. Like when teams have good tight ends, like it is just, it's a cheat code. And for whatever reason, they just don't get valued like that. They don't get produced like that. I mean, but if you can get one, I think it's worth its weight in, you know, gold wrapped in platinum. Like, it is just an unbelievable upgrade to your offense. So I love Bowers at 14, honestly. Like, I think you could get him there.
Would that excite the fan base more than pass rusher, more than receiver, obviously more than left tackle, even though it's important? You think Brock Bowers would be the one that would generate more enthusiasm from the fans than any move they could make there?
Yeah, I mean, because they'll go watch the highlights. You know what I mean? Like, that's like the highlight. Yeah. Like, watching this dude's highlights over the last several years, like, he just pops. And, I mean, I think there's just, like, a lot of stuff he does that helps the team. You know, I don't know if he's Travis Kelce, but he's somebody that I think can make a difference on an offense for sure. So, yeah, definitely, I think it's something that would be exciting. Exciting the fan base. Brian Thomas, I think, is something that would really excite the fan base.
Well, sure, of course.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a few things.
By the way, while you're in Orlando, I'll be LSU's Pro Day Wednesday. We always go there because the Saints always have a big contingent there. But holy cow, is there some star power there this year?
Yeah, they're definitely is. All right, moving on to the Martins question of the day. Martins is home to a wide selection of hand-picked barrel select bourbon, whiskeys, and more. Martins, so much more than just wine. If the Saints do decide to trade back, though, do you think it is more likely they would trade back from 14 or from pick 45?
45, because I've never seen them trade down in round one in 20 years of covering the team that I can remember, I don't think. So more likely, yeah, but trading down from 14 would be more profitable. If they can really look at this and be like, we need a pass rusher, we need a left tackle, we need a receiver, and we need a tight end, then go ahead and move down to 20 and still get one of those, and then, you know, end up with 2 second rounders out of it or whatever. Like, easier for me to say that because you fall in love with players, and it's not wrong to fall in love with players in the draft, but it's just, you know, like I said, more than ever, I just kind of want a quantity, to go back to what we were speaking about in the first half of the show. But more likely, yeah, especially because that drought that they have is no round three or round four picks this year. If they moved down in round two and ended up with two threes or something like that, that's probably the more likely thing we'll see.
The reason I'm going to say 45 is because, like, I don't know that these gentlemen are capable of sitting still all through free agency, not being able to make the splashes, and then they go into the draft and they're like, you know what? Let's just wait till Friday. Like, I just don't see them. I don't see them dropping like 14. And again, they could trade down further into the first round, but I just don't see that level of patience. So if I'm putting my money on one, it is 45. I do think they want to get more picks, though, and I think it's something that they want to try to figure out, but you kind of got to be able to do that. So, yeah.
So wait, what's our actual prediction here? The 2/5 turn into one late fourth. Is that even enough? 2/5 and a 6th for a 4th, and then next year's 2nd for a 3rd? Is that, you know, is that how they do it, you think?
I could see something like that for sure. I mean, I, you know, if I had to put my money on it, though, I would put my money on them picking it 14 or higher or 45 and higher, but like both of those picks getting executed. I'm still not predicting the trade down.
No, I'm not either. I'm predicting a trade. And look, I would not kill them. I would not kill them. There was so much confusion when they did this with Alvin Kamara a few years ago. I would not kill them if they trade next year's second or a third that they don't have this year. I would not kill them for moving that pick up to this year. As Mickey Loomis loves to say, getting the guy in the building early. What I don't want to see is comboing any day one or day two picks. 2 seconds to get in the, you know, two thirds to get in the second, 2 seconds to get in the third, 2 firsts for one higher first. That's what I don't want to see in the early rounds.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I just don't want to see anything reckless. That's it. Just don't want to see it. But yeah, we'll see what they do in the draft. We'll have all your coverage on neworleans.football. Make sure you check out the site. Use the code NOF to save 20% on your first payment.
The mock drafts are starting soon.
They are. We will be back on Wednesday with another show. We'll all be back at the studio in Metairie. Appreciate you guys tuning in today, and we'll talk to you next time.